Yes, it's Monitor for Music. And just in case I forget, there's always something there to remind me. By Peter Nero. Ted Steele, and on this Ides of March, 2013 years ago, Julius Caesar found out that with friends like his, who needs enemies? Well, Julius, that's life. Sammy Davis could have told you.
Daddy started out in San Francisco, tooting on his trumpet loud and mean.
Suddenly a voice said, go for Daddy's, play the picture on a wider screen.
And the voice said, Daddy, there's a million pigeons waiting to be hooked on new religions. Hit the road, Daddy, leave your common law wife. Spread the religion of the rhythm of life. And the rhythm of life is a powerful beat. It's a tingle in your fingers and a tingle in your feet. Rhythm in your bedroom, rhythm in the street. Yes, the rhythm of life is a powerful beat.
To feel the rhythm of life,
to feel the powerful beat, to feel the tingle in your fingers, to feel the tingle in your feet. Daddy, go, 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 go. Daddy spread the gospel in Milwaukee, took his walkie-talkie to Rocky Ridge,
blew his way to Canton, then to Scranton, till he landed under the Manhattan Bridge.
Daddy was a new sensation, got himself a congregation, built up quite an operation down below.
With the fire type of blowing, while the mustard tail was flowing, all the cats were go-go-going
down below.
Daddy, Daddy was a new sensation, to the fire tail of congregation, with the fire department of the nation.
Swim to your daddy.
Hit the floor and bomb to your daddy.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Let me hear it!
Yeah!
Rock it to me!
Yeah!
Let it all hang out!
Yeah!
Wind, 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 wind.
having wonderful time, wish you were here. Those seven words could mean the difference between a postal system under control or one that's running wild, especially from a place that's a tourist attraction. Here for Monitor's survey this weekend of postal conditions everywhere, the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, Carlos Romero Barcelo. Our reporter is John Cannon.
We're quite interested to find out what the problems are, if there are problems in the postal service here in Puerto Rico, in San Juan. What about, first of all, mail that comes from the United States here and goes from here to the United States? Is service fast or could it be better?
Well, the service could definitely be better. We have had instances of airmail from the New York area to San Juan taking as long as 5, 6, 7 days. We've had instances of regular mail getting here sooner than airmail, which is seems odd, but I think the reason for this is that regular mail is being sent airmail, and ships are no longer being used for regular mail between New York and San Juan.
But the net result is that all this mail is much slower than it should be.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Does the Latin temperament have anything to do with this? We in the States have this concept, this image of Latin countries where they do things, you know, mañana, things are a little slower now. Is that true?
No, I don't think here in Puerto Rico we have too much of this by now. I think that people here are very conscious of the new developments in the economy, that you have to, in order to get ahead, you have to do things today and not tomorrow, and I think that you will find that San Juan is a vigorous city in this respect. But the main problem, as I see it, is the voluminous amount of mail that is irrelevant and unimportant. The use of the mails for advertising, when you get hundreds and thousands of advertisements through the mails, which have clog up the mails, take up your time, this is, to me, the main problem in the mail.
About 1,250 miles northwest of San Juan, as the seagull flies, there is the fast-growing community of Pensacola, Florida. And one item that seems to be growing faster than anything else is the problem of postal service. Why Pensacola? And what are you doing about it?
More industry and more tourists. That's the problem in a nutshell, as the Pensacola postal workers toss up their postcards in dismay. It seems as though there's no room to do anything in the existing mail-handling facility downtown. The place is literally swamped with the ever-mounting flood of correspondence and packages. Even worse, Pensacola is the distribution point for all of Northwest Florida, the fastest-growing area in the state. In light of all this, Postmaster Henry Brosenham has decided not just to expand, but build an entirely new facility for the handling of mail. Well, the Post Office Department agreed, and bids will be advertised in the early spring for construction of a huge facility designed solely for the handling of mail. There'll be no stamps or money orders sold, no post office boxes or the 10 most wanted posters, just a driveway and a big door marked in on one side and a bigger door marked out on the other. Inside the building, mail will zip from point to point on conveyor belts, almost eliminating the carrying of heavy trays and other time-consuming legwork. And speaking of zip, the mail will be sorted primarily by zip code at the first sorting point, taking into consideration extra sorting steps, missing a truck here, a missed plane connection there. Mail without zip code could be delayed as much as a day, so a big use your zip code barrage is set to begin soon also. Mail zip coded for the Pensacola local area, 35202, will be shunted right to the local route department, virtually assuring same-day delivery. This is Bob Carrigan in 35202, reporting for Monitor.
And there'll be more reports on postal problems here and abroad throughout the Monitor weekend. Vic Dana's no postman, but he knows how to deliver a song. You, says Vic, are my destiny.
Yeah.
on Monitor Beacon. Monitor, I'm Ted Steele. Keep Me in Your Heart might be the themes for this happy ending Monitor sports story told by Joe Garagiola.
You know, we hear so many stories about how fickle the public is and how they forget their favorites so quickly that I'd like to tell you a story that's just a little different. It was over 40 years ago that George Harper was playing the outfield for the New York Giants. The name might not be a familiar one to a lot of people, but Harper was a pretty good ball player. He spent 14 years in the big leagues, and he left with a lifetime batting average of .303. Our story really begins near the end of Harper's playing career. He came to the Giants, a team that had a lot of loyal fans in New York. One of those fans was a young man named Al Regan. Regan was a great admirer of Harper's, and during the 1927 season, the two men got to know each other. After Harper left baseball, there was an occasional correspondence, but time took its toll. Now we jump ahead to last Christmas. Al Regan was sitting in his New Jersey home, and his thoughts turned to his youth and to George Harper. So Al Regan did something that a lot of us think about, but very few of us ever do. He picked up a telephone and called Harper at his home in Magnolia, Arkansas. Harper, now a 76-year-old widower, had been out for a walk, and as he returned home, the phone was ringing. There was, I suppose, a lot of small talk and some wishes for a Merry Christmas. But the biggest message of all was quite obvious. This was a call that covered more than just 1,000 miles. It covered over 40 years. This was a fan calling to say, quite simply, I haven't forgotten. It was obvious that George Harper was deeply touched. He said that he had come close to not answering the phone, and now he was so glad that he did. Together, the two men did the impossible. They turned back the clock. If there was once someone for whom you applauded, and for whom that applause has been turned off, I suggest you put the Postal Service to the same use. Al Regan and George Harper can tell you what a great feeling it can give you. This is Joe Garagiola from Monitor Sports.
And here's what today's heroes are doing in sports, some late results and comment from the Monitor Sports Desk. Outfielder Frank Howard became the highest paid player in the history of the Washington Senators when he signed today for $100,000, and that's double the salary Howard received last season when he hit 44 home runs. The World Amateur Hockey Championships in Stockholm began on a sour note for the United States. Russia beat the American team in the opening game 17-2. Russia is the defending champion. Barbara Jo Rubin, the 19-year-old girl jockey, rode another winner at Aqueduct today. She was aboard Mayberry in the first race. The horse paid $7.20. Tonight, Miss Rubin will ride in the ninth race at Charlestown.
There was a time we'd sit in the backyard, 'cause the house would get so hot. From the summer sun, there was no way of sleeping. And you'd play your old guitar, we'd fight mosquitoes and enjoy your backyard concerts, but we had no television. We'd just begun our life as man and wife, and hardships then could scarcely scare us into quitting. Things were far from being fine, we often dined upon a dime, but there never was a time we didn't love. And that Christmas brought our saddest day, when your pride gave way, you told the kids there'd be no gifts 'cause we were broke. And though the little tears of grief was so hard to see, it didn't hurt me like the love I knew was in your throat. The bills we couldn't pay, they came and took our car away, but there never was a time we didn't love. Now there's an easy chair for my back, a satin pillow for my head, and the kids are wild about their brand new cars. Dad and I can order steak with all the trimmings and not worry if we spend a dollar more than we can spend.
never was a time we didn't love. Oh, there never was a time, never was a time, there never was a time we didn't love. Oh, there never was a time, never was a time.
That's a brand new one by Jeannie C. Riley, the Grammy Award winner. It's called There Never Was a Time. The regional finals of the National Spelling Bee are being held this week, and one of the words that's giving the kids trouble is flageolet, which means a small woodwind instrument of the flute class. See if you can figure it out while Paul Mauriat plays Eleanor. F-L-A-G-E-O-L-E-T, okay? Down in Greenwood, Mississippi, the word on everybody's ear is monitor, and the place to listen is station WGRM. This is your old spellbinder, Ted Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E.
Carmel Quinn, Ed McMahon, Tommy Makem, next week's Now People. You can join them. This is Roscoe. Tune in now.
Exciting variety of news, music, interviews, and the human story of people, places, and ideas, designed to catch the ear and expand the awareness. I'm Ted Steele, and the association begins by saying goodbye, Columbus.
Thank you.
postal problems this week, the Monitor discovered that one situation which seems to disturb most communities is the use of the mails to distribute pornographic material. And reporter Linda Sutter spoke to a congressman who plans to do something about it.
Congressman John Weidler, fourth-term Republican from Nassau County, New York, has introduced a bill which, if passed, would prohibit mailing obscene material to minors. He estimates that last year, approximately 25 million pornographic articles were sent through the mails.
Recently, the entire nature of the use of this type of material has changed to a degree that it's growing on itself, as all these things do. It's getting more explicit and more damaging all the time, and it's becoming a very large business in our country, and people make a lot of money from it, and it's kind of not blood money, but it's filthy money, and unless you take some hard stand against these type of things, they just continually grow. And as a congressman, I of course know how it's growing, because I received complaints from parents and some young people who receive this type of thing in the mail and are embarrassed and annoyed by it, don't want it, didn't ask for it, and have it thrust upon them, and they ask me to do something to help them, to protect them as their federal representative.
Congressman Weidler has proposed a straightforward, hard-line solution.
A person cannot mail certain types of matter to minors, and if this type of matter is mailed, then it becomes a federal crime of a serious nature. By serious, I mean that the person doing it could be fined $5,000 and or sent to prison for 5 years.
The bill also proposes to hold the publisher of pornography responsible for determining who receives his material, which heretofore hasn't been his responsibility.
It's going to put a very severe burden on the publishers, and personally, of course, I approve of that too, because I would like to see all publishers of all types of material take a little more interest in the type of thing that they're, number one, printing, and two, disseminating. And if they have a close question, to decide it, something which they think might be pornographic, to decide possibly that would be just as well if they tried selling something other than that.
Congressman Weidler feels strongly that there's an immediate need for a bill such as his, but as a fourth-term member of Congress, he's realistic about the length of time it will take even to arrange hearings on it.
I hope that it will receive some attention and possibly hearings in this session of the Congress. I know as a practical matter, there's not going to be any rush to pass this legislation. These things take time, and I, too, am a patient man. So I'm working behind the scenes to try to get it into a position where it may have a reasonable chance to have hearings on it, number one, and number two, be passed into law.
Congressman John Weidler, who feels one of our most serious postal problems involves mailing pornography to minors and has proposed a bill to prevent it. Linda Sutter reporting for Monitor.
And there'll be more reports on every aspect of the postal situation throughout the Monitor weekend. by Lalo Schifrin. Here's an item about a recording star. Abe Ravin sold his millionth record this week. He's a Denver doctor who recorded heart sounds, and they're used in medical education. Now there's a beat. Now here's a Perry Como.
The bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle. And the hills, the greenest green in Seattle. Like a beautiful child.
Just ahead here on the Monitor Beat.
Unlike so many childhood ailments, poisoning accidents are 100% preventable. To understand this statement is to understand a growing child. As a youngster progresses to age 5, he crawls, then is able to lift himself up and toddle, and finally climb. Through each stage, he explores the world around him, investigating by reaching, feeling, and eventually putting an object into his mouth. Grown-ups have become so used to the helpful effects of medicines, the gratifying results of a detergent, that we overlook the hazards involved if these products are accidentally swallowed. We should rearrange the storage of household products as a youngster goes through the various stages where his reach and consequently the danger changes. Are your aspirins on the bedside table? Iron pills in your purse? Is the bowl cleaner on the bathroom floor? This public service message is brought to you by WNBC, cooperating with the Planning Council for National Poison Prevention Week. WNBC, Radio 660, New York.
My name is Ted Steele, and speaking of names, here's one to remember. Glenn Yarborough, Someday, Somehow. It's new.
Set upon the empty hours of a lonely man. There beyond my searching eyes remains the one and only dream I'm hoping for. Deep stress my soul, and I'm not sure if I can get there without falling down. One day soon, I'll finally get a team, and then I'll surely feel that long time coming joy.
Monitor Sports Desk, bad news tonight for the New York Giant football fans. The team announced a $1 across-the-board hike in ticket prices for 1969. It's the first price rise in 7 years, and the rumor is that other cities around the league may follow suit. Austria's Karl Schranz wrapped up the 1969 World Cup Skiing Championship today by winning the Giant Slalom in the Du Maurier International Meet at Mount St. Anne in Quebec. Unknown Jim Colbert is the leader at the 54-hole mark of the rain-swept Monsanto Open Golf Tournament in Pensacola. He had 7 birdies and no bogeys for a 7-under par 64 and a 3-round score of 200. And that put him 1 stroke ahead of Dean Beeman, who came in with a 63. There are some aspects of the generation gap that aren't funny. But when it involves a young mother trying to put her kids to bed, and her name is Betty Walker, it's funny. Monitor on stage. Spotlight on the mother of the moment, Betty Walker, telling it the way it is to her neighbor, Seal.
Hello. Seal?
Are you, huh? No, what are you interrupting? No, I'm putting one kid to bed for the night. The other one's still eating lunch.
Something in her. Marilyn, make a hum, hum, hum. Empty and fill. Hold on, Phil. She's testing me. Hold on. Marilyn, you're going to sit here, sweetheart, and you're going to eat this lunch if it takes us till 4 o'clock in the morning. And after lunch, you're going to eat supper. Make a hum. Go ahead. Taste it. It's delicious. Go ahead. Take another spoon. It's delicious. Yeah. Sam? I don't know how she eats it. I can't even look at it. Yeah, listen, what I want to ask you... Hold on 1 second. Hold on. The other one just got out of bed. Chicken. Chicken! What are you doing out of bed? Hold on, Sal. Mother put you to bed 3 hours ago. Why aren't you sleeping? What do you mean you feel insecure? If Mother smacks you, will you feel more secure? Now get into bed. Mother loves you. I said Mother loves you. Get into bed. Good night with love. I said good night with love. Say good night to Mother with love. Say good night, Mother. I love you. Say good night to Mother. Get into bed. See, you're looking at me. See, you're mad. Yeah. Is she mad? Yeah. She looks just like his sister now.
And go to sleep. Marilyn! Marilyn! Wake up and eat!
Sleep on me with the lamp shut, hanging out of her mouth. Yeah, listen, Phil. I want to pull you back. No, I better put her to bed with the lamp shut. So pull you back.
Monitor on stage, Betty Walker having trouble with the kids. Maybe they want to stay up to listen to Monitor, Betty. The Fifth Dimension. Tomorrow on Monitor, Henry Morgan's back again in the host chair, and we'll continue our look at the postal problems here and abroad, finding out if snow ever stops the mails in Alaska, if rain ever stops it in London, if wind ever stops it in Chicago, and if love letters in Paris are ever too hot to handle. The Monitor regulars will be on hand, too. Bob Considine, Dr. Joyce Brothers, movie critic Gene Shalit, and others. That's Monitor tomorrow. By Pete Jolly. The people of Anchorage, Alaska are jolly this week because the hungry moose, or is it mooses, that have been invading the town in search of food, have retreated back to the surrounding countryside, leaving behind 25 battered automobiles whose drivers thought they had the right-of-way at intersections. NBC News next. I'm Ted Steele.
patient enters an Easter Seal Rehabilitation Center, he has the assurance that highly skilled physical therapists will use the most modern and advanced methods to rehabilitate him, to teach him to use an artificial limb, or to train him to walk with braces on both legs. He'll work with occupational therapists, too, to strengthen his weakened hands and to increase his range of motion. Maximum physical restoration is accomplished by registered occupational therapists who employ graded activities. Physical and occupational therapy are very important to the handicapped individual if he is to be saved from a life of dependency. Easter Seal therapists work long and patiently with each person, helping to work the miracles of rehabilitation. And that's your help, too, because you care enough to give to Easter Seals each year. Because of you, thousands of crippled children are taught to lead useful, productive lives.
The facts. First, straight, and actual. That's news on WNBC, Radio 660, New York.